Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, hello, hi, hello, how is everyone? Well, I'm happy that you're here, I'm happy that I'm here, and I'm most happy about the warm weather. The spring is going to return to Northeast Georgia pretty soon, and I'm going to be a happy girl. I am telling you today that there's a lot for us to do. As you already know, today's topic is Women's History Month, and we are discussing Women's History Month today and the next 3 Sundays because this is Women's History Month, and we need to know some more about it. But let me tell you something else. Please excuse me. I am going to start out today with a thing that I used to do called the Health Bite. We had the IT moment, and then we had the Health Bite, you know, just to be sure I got those things covered along with whatever the topic of the day was. But listen to this. I want you to know that I have learned. One thing that I used to really avoid was those scented candles that people buy that they think are aromatherapy. Well, those things are not aromatherapy, okay? They're not. I visited a house 10 days ago where there were some of those candles in there, and they weren't even lit. I was in there for 1 hour, and by the time I came out, or went to bed and woke up in the morning, I had symptoms of a bad head cold. Now, let me just tell you this. There are two different ways that you can be intoxicated by those things. One, that you can just breathe the scent of it, okay, of the candle themselves. But the other thing that you can do is, I mean, the other thing that you can be exposed to, you know those room sanitizers that spray something out every 30 minutes or every hour or what it is? Oh, boy, those things, those are not your friend. You should put those things on the same list as sugar because those things are not your friend, and they will just make you so sick. So this thing had, it has, okay, there's one in every room. And it's a big open house, so that means that there's a whole lot of scent to travel. Well, it traveled. It followed me everywhere that I went. And then finally, I looked around and I came back and I said, I'm allergic to those candles. Well, obviously, the person who lived there was interested in keeping his house smelling good, so that's why he had them. No matter what the scent is, no matter what it smells like or reminds you of, those things are toxic, T-O-X-I-C, and they are not your friend. Excuse me. So finally, I have been coughing nonstop, just about nonstop. By nonstop, I mean coughing some every day. But I've been coughing until 2 nights ago when I got so tired and disgusted with it. Nothing was working, and believe me, I was trying everything. I, of course, wasn't taking no cough medicine or nothing like that, but I finally mixed up some tea tree oil, lime oil, and clove oil in a spoonful of honey, dark honey, and I took it down, and in a little while, I noticed that I was not coughing anymore, but I want you to know one thing about tea tree oil. That stuff is bad. I'm not kidding you. It's just really, really bad. What do I mean when I say it's bad? It tastes like cleaning fluid. But once you get past the taste of cleaning fluid, you know, it's all right. It's not so bad. So I did that, and then I did it again last night. The clove is a sedative, so it helps you to relax and go to sleep. But last night I did it again, but this time I put thyme in it because thyme is a, excuse me, it has magnesium in it and it relaxes muscles. That includes the muscles in your throat. So that was good. Okay, so that's the opening, the opening for today. Avoid toxic candles because they are not your friend. Okay, promise me that you will avoid those candles. And pretty soon, they'll stop selling. So there's two things you can do to be sure those candles are not aromatherapy. One thing is you can look at the cost, because if they were true aromatherapy, they would be made of dry herbs and oils or some version of an herb, and it would cost much more than what it does cost. And the other thing is that if you smell it and it strains your nose, what's happening, it is dragging, it is tensing the olfactory nerve in your nose, and you will want to recoil. Now, a lot of times, people are so accustomed to those things that they think they smell good when they don't. Mm-mm. No, no, no. They don't smell good. And they are not aromatherapy. Okay, so that's all I have to say about that. Thanks for listening. Now, as I said, excuse me, March is National Women's History Month. Have you ever wondered why there is a need for Black History Month, Hispanic History Month, Confederate History Month, Women's History Month? Have you ever wondered why all those are necessary? Well, I say that they're necessary because of the separatism that is the very lifeblood of American culture. You see, if American culture didn't depend so heavily on separatism and all these other isms that we talk about, and there would just never be a need for women's history, because women would have never been written out of history. Wouldn't be any need for African-American history, because African-Americans would have never been written out of history. You see what I'm saying? So that is what you have to look at when, if you ever should start to wonder why we need all of these months or weeks or occasions, that's why. So today we are starting our conversation. And so I just want to ask you a question or two about this month's topic. And I'm just going to ask you, do you know all that you want to know about the history of women? Do you know all that you want to know about the accomplishments of women? Do you know all that you want to know about the health of women? Or do you even want to know any more about how it is that more women and children live in poverty than men do? If you want to know any of this, then you are at the right place. Please excuse me. I am duty bound to exegete something at some point. Now remember, exegesis is the act of reading meaning out of scripture, but not just scripture, the reading meaning out of any piece of sacred text. So today I actually am reading something to you from scripture, and that scripture is 2 Timothy 2:15, which says, study to show thyself approved. Study is the operative word. Now, you know, if you've ever heard me talk, you know that study is very crucial to me. Study, study, study. Study is its own reward. It's kind of like unrequited love. But study to show thyself approved unto God, a worker that needeth to not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. The second scripture that I want to remind you of is the story in Deuteronomy after the Exodus, when the laws were being given, and it was a return to the fold for the people who had been in exile. And this is what was said to them. It was you who saw the good that God did for you while you were suffering, not your children. It was you who saw how God waylaid your enemies. These are not the precise words, but this is the story. So the point of that scripture is that being that you've seen the things that God has done, and you know the things that God has done and can do, then it is your to learn them and to teach them to your young, because your children haven't seen any of it, and they need to. So that's why I am glad that Women's History Month follows African American History Month, because there's always a need to teach these things to your young. Young means anybody you know who doesn't already know. So here's how it started. It started in 1987 when Congress declared March National Women's History Month. A group of 1980, actually, there was a group called the National Women's History Project. It was founded and existed in Santa Rosa, California. And their job, their focus was to broadcast women's historical achievements. Now, here's an aside to that, is that women's historical achievements are just dandy. And they ought to be acknowledged and highlighted. The historical achievements have, in my view, they pale just a bit when they are positioned alongside not necessarily the achievements or the contributions, but the actual fact of women's very lives and existence and culture. Because, you see, there is a culture of women's existence, not just in this country, but in the entire world. We come today and we discuss women's history. So it seems that originally, the week that began March the 7th, 1982, was declared Women's History Week. Started out as a week. 1 week was enough. It wasn't enough. You see, 1 week is not enough time to bring to the attention of the minds and the hearts and the heads of the entire world, not just the country, but it's not enough time to bring those out to the front and hand them over and discuss them and teach them and broadcast them. So then, that's why it was that in 1987, the entire month of March was appropriated for that. Excuse me. Now, it happened in a similar fashion with African American History Month. Mm-hmm. And one of these days I'm going to give a quiz and I'm going to see who's listening and who's paying attention, who can remember who it was that started the celebration, the recognition of, somebody will surely remember. So anyhow, the job of the NWHP is to provide information and training in multicultural women's history for educators, community organizations, and parents, or anyone wanting to expand their understanding of women's contributions to U.S. history. Now, before I go any further with that, I want to put in my view of that. I think, as I said, I think it's a noble enough cause that these women wanted to do this work, but I also think that if you divide yourself, you're already divided, women, okay? And then if you divide yourself again into, for example, the National Association of University Women, I'm just going to say that somebody from that organization was in this organization, the NWHP. But what I'm coming to is that every woman who has ever lived in this world, on this earth, has a story to tell that relates her place, that declares, that stabilizes her place in her world. It may be overlooked if you are only looking for women who have made, quote, contributions and who have had, quote, achievements, period. Because you know, one of the things that comes to my mind when I start talking about women's history is the cultural and social, if you want to call them, achievements of women. Just the fact that, let's take for example, birth control. When there was a time when women were so controlled by society and the church and the man that they lived with that they had no say over how many children they had. Pretty much, they had as many children as their bodies could have. Oh, every once in a while, you come across a story where a man involved decided that there were enough children, and other children came and just he knew nothing about it. Didn't know what was causing it. And then when the house filled up with children, he left. You see, that is a historical fact as well as anything else that you could come across. I always hurt deep down in my bones when I hear about domestic violence and when I hear about how, for example, how easily, this is another question I want to ask you. Have you ever wondered why it's so hard for a female to prove that she was raped? Have you ever wondered why that is, why men have such a hard time punishing other men for violations against women and children? It may not seem to you important in terms of women's history, but it is. It is very important. You know, although it isn't written down, it probably is written down somewhere, but I haven't seen it. But, you know, it is written down in the canons of law of this country that there was a time when a person such as myself, that is to say, a black person, was only considered 3/5 of a person. Now, if black people were once considered 3/5 of a person, you can be sure that at some point or other, it served somebody's purpose for white women to only be counted as 3/5 of a person. That, I can assure you, you may not ever find it written, but you will see it. You'll see it when you're looking around at how, and I always go back, see, no matter what happens, no matter what social malady I am looking at, I will always trace it back to the church. I will trace it back to the church and to Western European Christianity. As a matter of fact, when I was doing an independent study and when I was studying for my master's degree in Christian education, one of my papers was about how the Christian religion affects the development of the female personality. Now, my professor, the great late Dr. Smith, told me that that was one of the best papers that he had read in his entire time as a professor. And I believe it because, you know, typically people who are studying in a seminary, a Christian seminary such as the one I attended, would never take such a position as that. But I did. Excuse me. So as I was saying, I just, no matter what it is, I will credit the Christian religion for whatever problem there is. I will, and I am not ashamed to tell you that. So let's just take another look. Women can now with a little bit more impunity, but women couldn't make decisions about how many children they would have or how often they would have children, or even if they would have children. As a matter of fact, women who didn't want to have children had all sorts of things said against them and to them and about them by other people. Most often, people in their family, people in their community, absolutely people in their church. But now, don't you think it's an achievement that today women don't have children if they don't want to? Okay. Obviously, there are plenty of women who still do it, but even those who don't do it, even those who do it, they may still feel like they don't have a choice. So when we come to the end of the month, the final conversation that I'm going to present to you has to do with women's issues through the eyes of a baby boomer. I am a baby boomer, and I have been watching ever since the women's movement and DERA was first born. I've been watching these things, and I haven't so much been watching the world's attitude or behavior toward women, but I have been watching the world's attitude, the women's attitude toward themselves. And I look sometimes, and I am just astonished to see that it doesn't look that much different. There's a whole lot more to women's strength and women's culture than being paid an equal amount of money to what men are paid for the same job. As a matter of fact, the National Women's Health Project has a motto, a theme each year, and their theme this year is working to form a more perfect union, semicolon, honoring women in public service and government. Okay, put that aside. And then I want to come back and tell you one other thing about that organization. They declare that their aim today is as simple and clear as it was 25 years ago, which is to teach as many people as possible about women's role in history. Their motto is, "We believe that our history is our strength." Now, if you have been listening to me on this show or on my local show, you will know what I have to say about belief. And belief is simply unsubstantiated information. And you will also remember that one of my favorite things to say is, do not believe in anything simply because you have read it. I'm sorry, simply because you have heard it. Excuse me. Do not believe in anything simply because it is spoken and rumored by many. Do not believe in anything simply because it is found written in your religious books. Now, I don't know what any of this means to anybody but me. And so when I listen to people talk about progress, and then I look to see what are the parameters for judging the progress, it really makes me shake my head because I'm obviously missing something. For example, magazines like Better Homes and All of You and all those types of magazines, all those various women's magazines will always tell you about how the roles of women are changing. It seems to me that if the roles of women are changing, then the roles of men are changing too. However, I don't notice anything, I don't see anything that makes me think that these roles are changing or even shifting. For example, the next time you go in Walmart or Sears, Penny's, or any of those places where people go and take their children with them, take a look and see who is in charge of the children. See who's holding the children's hands. See who is just kind of lagging behind as if he is oh so very bothered and oh so very bored. Now, that doesn't tell me a thing in the world about what happens at home, but I always say that people take their behavior with them when they go out in public, and so therefore, if there is a situation, if you react to a situation in a certain fashion at home, you'll do it the same way when you're in public. That may not be true. That's just what I think. But the other thing that I look at that troubles me so badly is the soap operas. You know, soap operas haven't changed a bit since the first time I saw one, probably 55 years ago, maybe even 60 years ago. They haven't changed a bit. People are always sniping against each other. There is always some woman, most of the time a man, who runs everybody's life, who somehow manages to collect some dirt on dang near everybody else in the cast, and this person is the person around whom the show revolves. Now, makes it so painful is that it never changes. It has not changed. And when I look at this and I realize that I don't ever see anybody complaining. I don't ever hear the moral majority complaining. I only hear them complain about politicians, especially if they're black. And every once in a while they speak up against crime. Every once in a while they speak up against something. Hell, I don't know. But I never hear the moral majority complain about the conditions that are perpetrated on soap operas. I also don't ever see any difference in Hollywood. Well, okay, fine. I don't live in Hollywood. So, you know, I'm not aware of what goes on out there from day to day. But I know this much. Somebody in Hollywood just isn't paying much attention. Or somebody somewhere, I mean, isn't somebody supposed to care about the behavior of these people? Nobody ever talks against it. Nobody ever has anything to say about some guy. Like, you remember when Elizabeth Taylor married every one of her co-stars, every one of her leading men? Well, people still do that now. And nobody ever says a word about it. Nobody seems to mind. It's okay. Hey, it's no big deal. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's not right. But it all comes down to who is benefiting from it. That's the whole thing. Who's benefiting from it? Who benefits from this foolishness? Somebody does. You can be sure of that. Oh, gee, I think I got into a little bit of a rant. But, you know, I'm going to come back now to women's history. When you think about women's history, remember that there's much, much more to it than women's achievements and women's social contributions. Because every woman who worked to raise her child or her children alone, or never mind those women who worked two jobs, women who worked, who were raising their children alone, those women have made some major achievements as well. And they need to be known about as well. And they absolutely do not need to be forgotten or overlooked. Now, I'm down to the end of the journey for today, and I just want to give you a book that I'm going to be working from for the entire month. Remember also, Wednesday at 7, we are having tea. Okay, Wednesday at 7, same bat time, same bat station. That book that I want to refer you to is Women's Choices in Natural Healings. And it is published by Prevention Magazine. It is an absolute manual for any sort of health enhancement or health improvement, and it covers 5 different therapies: food therapy, juice therapy, music therapy, aromatherapy. It includes reflexology, and it gives you a discussion of, it cross-references the elements with the therapies that are suggested. You'll find it very, very helpful, and I will return to it in future shows. This is Sandra Davenport, the Health Reverend. It has been a pleasure speaking with you today. I look forward. Please excuse my cough. I look forward to meeting you again soon.